Welcome to Season 2 of Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istral and Darknotch. We'd like to thank FFG and CardGameDB for their continued support, and the fantastic AGOT community as a whole for being the sole reason we do this cast. Thank you for letting us take you once again beyond the wall.
Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wall. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about some news, including the Nationals. And then we're going to have some 2.0 demo information from Alex, where I bitch a lot. Then we'll have some issues that I have with FFG. If you haven't got this yet, I'm going to bitch a lot on this episode. Then we'll have some closing comments.
All right, John, it's episode 31, and you said you wanted to get this out very quickly before you beat your kids to sleep?
No, before my kids beat me to sleep.
Oh, in that they sleep what?
They sleep before me. You know, it's like a race.
Oh.
You must have misinterpreted. Sure. I would never beat my children.
Yeah, but surely your kids should generally beat you to sleep. Anyway, all right. Should start off with an apology rather than making fun of John's physical child-rearing skills. Last week, closed off saying that there basically weren't any major tournaments. And it turns out there were three Nationals this weekend, so boy, did we call that one wrong.
There was Australian.
Australian Nationals. They had 12 people, which was about the attendance they were expecting. This is not really a surprise. That meta has degraded a little bit, and there have been some location choices with the Nationals.
Shifters, yeah.
So that was not particularly surprising. 12 people in the end. It was a Martell versus Martell final. A Martell
NA versus CA.
Yeah, and we have the AAA list that I'll be posting alongside this episode. I don't have the no agenda list. Really, I don't generally post runner-up lists, but this is sort of like a bait so that the Martell no agenda player will post their list.
Well, on top of that, I think it's a great AAA list. It actually, identified the problems that we had found when we were testing for Gen Con with it, which was a whole bunch of draw issues. And they filled that void by throwing like basically every draw card they could from Martell into the list.
All right, other Nationals. So there were two other Nationals. Which one would you like to start with?
Let's talk about the Italian.
Italian Nationals was the reasonably sized one. They had 45 people. Again, despite some issues with distributors, and in fact, I think they're changing distributors, or they've just changed distributors. There's definitely something changing, because I know that the second edition is being distributed, or at least translated by someone new from the first edition. So I'm not sure what transition that meant for Nationals, but 45 people, pretty reasonable attendance, not the records, but nothing to complain about. And that was won by a Stark Maesters, and we have that list as well in the comments.
Which is awesome.
And finally, we have what last year we were calling the best meta in the world.
Yeah, it's depressing now, but it was won by a cool deck. So it was won by Stark Harrenhal, which the person's been playing for like 2 years now. And it's one of my favorite decks to play, something similar to that. So that's great.
John is not kidding. When we were testing for Gen Con, and he was getting really frustrated with some of the decks and how they were performing, and I was like, play the deck you like best. And he played that one for about, eight matches. It did very badly. And so I said, okay, don't play the deck you like best.
But that is the deck I like best, so good on the other person
for figuring out the deck. So Stark Hall took a 12-person Spanish Nationals, and that is a huge plummet from where it was about 3 years ago. Again, yeah. Not that surprising. They thought they seemed to think they were going to get about 20 this year, but there have been huge communications issues with the distributor, with when this tournament was going to be, with where it was going to be, with how the prize support was going to be handled, with how the admission was going to be handled, and then they were really, really quiet on it. Almost no news, not much warning as to when this was coming up. It was an absolute disaster. So 12 people showed up. Still, obviously, some competitive players. This is the Spanish.
Great arena. Competitive players. Yeah.
Other news: the FFG, and this is barely news, put up another deck list article. Which I guess they're going to do every Monday until the core comes out, or they run out of deck lists. So they put up a Targ Fealty deck list, which is a fine deck. I mean, we know what Targ Fealty does and the advantages of being able to play things like Dracarys without having to save gold over. It speaks for itself. I mean, I'm glad they're still doing Thrones 2.0 articles. I don't feel particularly strongly the need for deck lists, but I think it's a good thing that they're doing them.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that either. Mm-hmm. Seems like a big waste of time to do these specialized deck list articles when you could be having much better articles.
Well, what kind of articles would you recommend?
Well, I mean, player articles, how to build a meta, how to do demos, any of these would work.
Optides, yep, all right. You hadn't even thought of it, and you came up with some great answers. I got to bow to you. This, by the way, listeners, is going to be a sort of running theme of the episode. John is having a very bitter week against FFG, so you'll see this running. It's true. It's true.
It's 100% true, listeners.
All right.
It's a bitter day, actually. It's just because I found out today two of my metamates left the meta, and one of them is my close friend, so it hurts so bad.
So, other news. This will cheer you up, John. CP1, the first chapter pack, hit the printers officially.
Yay!
Your enthusiasm is
powerful. It'll be here in 6 months.
It'll be here in some amount of
time. Yeah.
Actually, that's... we do have an estimate. It's an FFG estimate, but they actually seem to say in the third chapter pack that it's going expected in 2016. So that would suggest that currently now they pushed the release schedule to one in November, one in December, one in January, which again would suggest that they're expecting the core to be in October, I guess. Which shouldn't surprise anyone at this point, right? Obviously, it's still...
So Worlds will be like core plus one chapter pack.
Yep. All right. Tried to avoid what they did with Conquest, but that's what Conquest was last year. And I guess they probably walked into a different trap with the same result. Finally, there's not really anything else I have, except that I really wanted to mention Rob St. John's YouTube channel. I was watching it earlier this weekend. He was live streaming. So now YouTube does a live stream thing. You don't have to go through Twitch, which is nice because I didn't like Twitch all that much. And the YouTube thing seems to work fairly well. This is the second time I've watched his live stream for that. I actually took inspiration from watching one of those decks play out to basically constructing one of the matchups for my demo decks that I used this weekend. So he's been a great, great host for this, and he's been inviting us into his meta and his play session, and very welcoming of comments, even if it's you guys missed a trigger and stuff like that. And is willing to adjust based on feedback, play the decks that people want to see. His metamates do it as well. It's great. It's fantastic. And
I'm going to say positive things about Rob St. John. This guy travels seriously for the game. Like, he went to Gen Con. He goes to Montreal, which is no small drive for him. We're talking 6 to 8 hours. He's willing to commute to play. And when he shows up with a group of people, his wife, his friends. And, if you can take a look at his YouTube channel. You're going to see some good players. You're going to see some fun. Definitely check it out.
All right, John.
Let's start it off, yeah.
Yeah, I just got back from running my demo session that I've been planning for a while, and it got delayed a few times and then was finally here.
Yeah, you did some awesome advertisement for it. How many people did you get?
So this is a shop that runs a big demo event on the first Sunday of every month, and so they incorporated me into that. So there were some people there for other things. I was there for about 5 hours. I never had less than two people, so I probably saw actually play about 10 people. And,
wow, it's
and,
more than I thought you would get.
Come in and ask questions about it and things like that, a lot more, probably 20 or so. On top of that. So a lot of people with interest just walking through the store and trying to find out what this game is and where they can buy it, which unfortunately the answer is you can't yet. But questions about when the French version is coming out, which obviously I wasn't particularly equipped
Never.
To answer. But it was interesting. It didn't go exactly as I had expected. There were some of the big preparations I'd done. I'd spent a lot of time on creating some decks that were mostly using two core sets and then some extra cards from a third so that I could have a third on display with most of the cards and, all the stuff as it comes in the core. And the decks were quite good, and they played very well, but I'd sort of tested them in pairs, said, I want to play Stark versus Lannister, and I balanced that matchup, and then I had a Tyrell versus Night's Watch, and I sort of balanced that matchup. And I had a much harder or harsher Barra versus Targ match that I balanced as well, and I sort of thought of them as introductory, the Stark versus Lanny, where if players have not really played games before, so on. Then I had a backup, sort of the Night's Watch versus Tyrell, which was a few more technical cards in there, a few more surprises, upsetting surprises sometimes, that kind of thing. And then I took the Baron Targ matchup and put in all the NPE cards as well, like Dracarys was in there, Melisandre was in there, that kind of stuff. And so I figured, you know, if I had a strong magic player or someone like that that wanted to go up a level to the challenge and experience something closer to the game, you know, it's still 40 card decks. I still only had 5 plots to sort of limit what people had to read and that kind of stuff. But I had a scale of the experience that people could play,
which I think is great. And you know, I also think it's a little sad that FFG didn't prepare something like that for stores to demo with. You know, FFG said that they were going to be spending their highest advertising budget ever on a card game for Game of Thrones.
They did,
but honestly, I haven't noticed any advertising really. Like, I go into my local shops, there's nothing. You ask the owners, they know nothing. It's all player driven, like what you just did.
It is. I'm. That still doesn't make it not their highest. I mean, to say something is your highest,
you spend,
simply has to be.
If
one.
You spend $5 and you normally spend $1, then yeah.
But now, remember, we did see that they were doing a demo kit. We just haven't seen the demo kit yet because
it just doesn't exist anywhere.
Or whatever the case.
I mean, the whole card pool's been released for a month or more since Gen Con, and there's no demo kits?
Well,
that is just sad.
A year for the Conquest ones, I think. It took three for Netrunner.
Are you telling me demo kits are going to come after the cards?
Yes, probably. I have no
idea.
That's
not useful, because then you can just demo with the cards.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the demo kits presumably have cards in them, but I think instructions on how to run the demo and decks that are balance to teach, or I don't know exactly.
Wow, like that makes me so sad that that couldn't come out at a more appropriate time so that you could use something like that. Like, if the community wants to run these types of events, the least FFG can do is provide the tools so you don't have to spend, like, how many hours did it take you to create these 3 tiers of decks? I know you were asking people's input, and they ended up being great decks, but I mean, that was a lot of work.
I refuse to answer the question.
How many hours, Alex?
I refuse to answer the question. I reserve the right not to incriminate myself. I don't really want to admit to that, because when you guys see the decks and I'll post them and you're like, well, that shouldn't have taken that long. Let's include sleeving time and all the other stuff.
Oh, no, because when you include sleeving time and all that, you're looking at 12 plus hours. You're not tricking
me. I'm a
really
slow sleever. Yeah, exactly.
No, I know how much time you spent on this. And it just, to me, that there isn't a standard, you know, a standard poster that can go up that they'll send you for nothing, because they'll pay the 50-cent poster because you're giving them free advertisement and you're demoing it, blows my mind that you had to go and get someone else to, you know, work with you to do the poster, and that probably took a few hours. And then you had to put the poster up, you had to arrange it, you had to get all the cards, you had to make the decks, there was no lists from FFG. It blows my mind. I'm so sad.
Magic bleeding over from our other conversations, so I want to sort of limit it. But I think there are lists in the core set that you can definitely play that work fine for demoing. I'm just a perfectionist, and I have access to multiple cores, and I wanted to milk that for something.
And you wanted tiers, and you wanted to do it right.
Well, I wanted to do it.
Right.
See, that's what I was going to say. I want to do it right, but I told you.
So why doesn't FFG want to do it right?
It didn't go as expected. Right is not what I thought it was. So with all my careful preparation, not a single person wanted to play one of the default matches. So the first people that I saw showed up and said, I'd love to try this. Can I play Night's Watch? I said, sure, yeah, I got this setup of Night's Watch versus Tyrell. And the other guy's, oh, no, but can I play Stark against it? All right. You know, I had this sort of cringing moment where I'm like, oh, how bad is this going to play out? Are there cards in there that I put that'll completely ruin that matchup? And I let it happen, and it was a 15-14 matchup. The guys loved it. They enjoyed it. They came back. They played a second match on the side. They had a fantastic time. So that worked. And I realized that with the next set and then the next individual and so on, that they wanted to play, you know, a specific faction, and that maybe building these specific pairings was not the best way to approach the situation.
Right, but that's, you know, look at this. You learn that from one test day. If FFG did that, they could have figured that out, and they could have bought, you know, 5-6 decks that are balanced.
this is your FFG bashing episode.
I certainly will join in, but
not in this section.
Batching episode. I'm just so disappointed with some of the prize support and the support for 2.0 and the fact that we have another delay and it's still not out. And I'm just – maybe I'm bitter because I'm slowly watching my meta melt away due to that. But it makes me sad because I love this game.
So – Demos. I did learn several things. So I did learn that the predetermined matches is not necessarily the best way to approach it. I did learn that I probably was not – there were a couple of things where I wasn't quite prepared. Like I had a whole bunch of playmats set out and I had, you know, all these other things and it was very nice. But I should probably have had, given the fact that we don't already have a core set product available and that kind of stuff, I should probably have had a contact info sheet to try and get in touch with people who were interested again later to try and, mm-hmm. and regroup them. And that's something that sort
of – incite them to buy. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, not even incite them to buy, but just say, hey, you know, the game's out now. I'm going to organize a game night. Would you like to come, you know, make more contacts? Now, that may not have mattered. I mean, it would have been a really good idea. I was stupid not to do it. But it turns out that a lot of the people that did come by, even the ones that were extremely excited in it or so on, were not necessarily the kind of people that I would likely build a meta out of. There were a lot of sort of casual living room players that were looking for one core experience. A lot of the casual players that we know exist in the game and that are the largest portion of their sales. And I sort of mm-hmm. got to see that firsthand. And it hadn't really clicked for me before because I never played the game in the store and the like, and my competitive meta is Octagon and Gen Con, and I always think of it that way. But really, the vast majority of the people there, even the ones who were very, very keen on it, were the kinds of people who are likely to play this in their living room, bring two friends over, bring three friends over, play a four-player game as it is, or play with their wife or whatever. And
then maybe once in a while they'll buy a random chapter pack because they're in the store.
Right, exactly. And so getting in touch with that and realizing that was quite fun, and it was interacting with a different kind of player, and I enjoyed that. But I did get a grasp that building a meta will take a little more effort on my part than I – you know, it's – obviously, I didn't think it was going to spontaneously assemble, but I certainly do need to push at some other areas, run of these when there's a Magic event around, maybe lure a couple of players that, you know, would be keen on that kind of thing to try and build a more regular scene from those kinds of players. Not that all the players have to be competitive, but that I think that if you have a couple of the kind of players who will want to show up every week, then snowballing things is much, much easier.
So, you know, I built my meta doing the same thing, Alex, doing these demos. I had to do about four of them before I got a critical mass of 5 or 6 players that were willing to come out all the time. And I actually found the best place to find them wasn't trying to strip people from Magic, but it was to get people to try a card game that were into the competitive board game scene. And the reason for that is that a competitive Magic player actually already owns his Magic cards. He knows that game, and he's competitive for a reason because he thinks he can win money. He thinks he can do well. So to strip them away from that, it's very difficult. Like, the newer Magic players are easier, I found. But a competitive board gamer, on the other hand, is playing board games for a similar reason to a lot of people that play LCGs. They want to have fun, but they want that competitive vibe. So I found that was a much easier transition than to take someone out of Magic as
That's encouraging, because after this, I realized someone had mentioned that there's this board games night going on tomorrow at one of the pubs that tends to have that kind of crowd. And I said, you know what, tomorrow's a day off. I can plan my day around it anyway. I'll head down to that pub. I'll make that sacrifice. It's also one of the best microbreweries in town, and I've been there regularly. I just didn't know they ran board game nights, so this is heaven. And so I'm going to show up there with some cores, play some board games with them as well, and maybe try and take a few people for a game or two. And I mean there are a lot of other things I learned from this demo, so that I would like to share, because I hope other people will try to do that kind of thing as well. One is, it was a lot of fun. I built all the decks with the idea that I might be playing them against my opponent, and I wanted to be able to win but make it look like it was close. Yep. So there are a lot of cards where in both directions where I'm like, you know, I'm going to win. I'm
a better player. They've never played, and you've played a few times.
And if they beat me the first time, then it's kind of – well, first of all, on the advertisements I said, come, you know, learn from –
The
world champ will be teaching. So obviously I didn't want to lose, but also I don't really feel it's a very good idea to lose to players just to get them interested in the game. I think you should just make a game of it and make sure that they stay in the game and always look at it. And then if they're beaten – then they understand that there's definitely skill involved, that even if it was close, that they might be able to make better, but that you were winning. And this is sort of the rope-a-dope play, which there's the counter-argument that maybe that's just as condescending. If I try to beat you by as small a margin as possible, it's a very technically demanding feat for me, but it's, you know, maybe it's even more demeaning to my opponent, and I'm sure some people feel that way, but I find it's more engaging for your opponent. If I really try to beat you and then you have no characters left on turn two, you obviously didn't really have a good time. But if you managed to squeak in that 13th power and thought you were so close because I chose to play in different ways or not to use this card in my hand, or, you know, I let you get to 14 and then I have this card that turns the game around in my favor, you go, ah, oh, man, it was so close. And I find that more engaging. But yeah, I have some cards that I actually initially would never have included in these decks, and that in the end I included them, and I think they performed very, very well. So some examples, and you probably think they're not the kind of cards to include in these demo decks. I had Winds of Winter as one of the five plots for the Stark deck, a Claim 2 plot. And I know that that's not something that's in the demo decks for the tutorial version. They shied away from Claim 2. But even further than that, I have things like Winter's Coming, copies in there. I have Ice, and I even put in two neutrals put to the swords in that deck. It's actually a fairly brutal deck. It could pull off a four kill. And if my opponent were to do so, it would be incredibly satisfying for them. But I think that the way most of those cards work, so things like Winter's Coming being additional claim and therefore not killing your best character immediately, and the fact that winning multiple challenges with that, or say Storm of Swords, is actually reasonably technically demanding to new players that think, you know, just throw everything into a challenge, created a kind of balance I wound up being really pleased with. I thought the Stark deck would be the biggest worry for me. It had all those cards in it, and I think it consistently performed the most the way I wanted it to. It always had potential, and whether that potential was explored or not depended very much on how the player was learning from the game. And I really liked that. And there were also great turnaround cards where I could close a game with Winter's Coming, Claim Raise on a power challenge without, you know, knocking their characters all to pieces and depriving them of a board state. So I thought that was a lot of fun.
You know, your statement about making sure the people in your meta feel like there's a chance for them to win, that they're not always losing to one or two guys, I think that's so important. I think it's important enough that, you know, I personally, if I thought that, you know, people always losing to me or people always losing to some other people in my meta, I'd go talk to that other person. I'd be like, you know, once in a while, maybe play a subpar deck, maybe even throw a game, because I think there's something to be said to making sure that people aren't discouraged about playing, that they have a chance to strive. If they're working super hard and they're getting better each time you see them, but, you know, you've been playing for 8 years, so it's going to take them another two to catch up to you. you know, once in a while, throw them a bone so that they know, you know, it's not impossible to win a store championship or a regional event because Alex Hines showed up, the world champion. So I really like the idea that you were, you know, willing to make it a game every time you played these people that you were teaching.
Make it a game, but I wasn't willing to let them win. I mean, come on, I'd put world champion on the poster.
Right, but I think if you played enough SCs with these people, sooner or later you'd say, you know, I might be okay.
Sooner or later they'd beat me. I'm not that good, and there's RNG in this game.
Oh, please.
The other deck that I think performed well above expectations, I was worried about including Night's Watch. I really wanted to get a Greyjoy matchup in, and it turns out that Greyjoy versus Night's Watch doesn't work at all. Because Greyjoy has too many means of bypassing that sort of ingrained defense theme, and it has We Do Not Sow, which destroys the.
So you just combined the two of them and said, "Bam, there
no,
we go."
No, I didn't. I did the Night's Watch deck. I built it, and I said, "Ah, this defense theme can't work, and it's going to be boring to play." And it was not. It was fun. It was the most popular deck. And it did reasonably well.
From the show is the reason it's so popular, right?
Yeah, that's a good portion of it, is the show. So really, all the time I spent thinking about this and theory crafting beforehand may not have been for much, because these decks exceeded my expectations, and the players seemed to have enjoyed them. And the bits I was worried about turned out not to be problems, and I'd actually changed some other things that I thought would be absolutely fine. Yeah, it also gives me more of a nod to the balance of this core set. The cards, I initially sort of thought that the way I'd build the deck would be to remove any cards I thought would be big problems. And for the right. Stark, for instance, I did that. I pulled out the Lykewarm Reigns. I didn't think that those were a good beginner experience, where you're being punished for winning, and if you didn't know the card existed, you couldn't play around it in any meaningful way. Well, I felt
it's tough card to play around with that anyways,
losing
right?
was fine. I felt like Winter is Coming showing up, or Ice, for instance, it's on the board and it's an additional punishing you for losing. I felt that wasn't as much of a viscerally awful experience. But I felt like Lykewarm Reign is a very important part of the game, and I like the fact that it's that kind of effect exists. I think Red Vengeance in the first edition is a phenomenal card, and it's great for the game. But it's not great for beginners.
Right.
And so that was a card that I pulled out of that deck. The Lannister deck, I had to pull very few cards. It was just a question of balancing it right, because I didn't feel there were any cards there that were terrifyingly oppressive. You know, when I was building the Greyjoy, I knew there were cards that were oppressive for the Night's Watch matchup, and I had to pull out Baelon.
Right, and for the Night's Watch, yeah.
And then I have Baelon, but I had Great Kraken without Baelon, and I felt, well, that's going to be weird. And then I had We Do Not Sow, which I definitely had to pull out. And then I started to realize I'm pulling out a lot of what makes Greyjoy Greyjoy, and so I had to toss it and just went with Tyrell, which was easier, I think. I also avoided a card that seems to be very, very common, and the reason I did was speed. I have very few instances of summons across all these six decks, or building season. Looking at the top 10 cards is assimilating a lot of information. And there's a reason that I chose only 5 plots. That's really so that players don't have to read 7 plots, you know, but still have the option and can still, you know, a game.
Figure out the game.
They were playing was actually, on average, probably ended on plot 6.
Probably the same reason you didn't play Heads on Spikes, right?
I didn't play Heads on Spikes. I think it's a good card for the meta. I think it shapes certain things. I didn't have March to the Wall in most of these decks to punish an initial opening setup. Your opponent wouldn't have known about it. But I did have Wildfire, because I feel like when you see that, you still get choices, right? You still say, okay, these are the 3 characters I want to keep.
I'm not going to lose my Tywin or my Jon Snow or whoever I'm in love with from the show that I played to a Wildfire. Yeah.
So those are some of the decisions that went into shaping these decks. With the exception of, like I said, the Bera versus Targ, I decided that was going to be a matchup where all the brutal stuff was there, and it was going to be aimed for players that I expected to be fine with having their characters knelt out, or, you know, walking head onto a wall of fire and going, ah, okay, I just got burned. But I didn't really get any of those sort of competitive players to show up, and I had people ask to play against me with one of those decks. And even with the weaker sort of Stark deck, I was still able to beat that Targ deck. I feel good about that. Yeah. So overall, I'm fairly pleased with it. I I think I need to, as you mentioned, adjust to a slightly different audience, maybe pick up some more competitive players by taking a slightly different angle at it, and definitely add a sign-up sheet. There are some minor tweaks I'll make to these decks, but I'll probably leave them in pretty close to their current form. You know, I decided 6 decks, 40 cards, because I thought that was the easiest way to distribute the resource cards, and it seems to have worked fairly well, so I'm going to stick with that for a while, leaving poor Martell and Greyjoy aside until I pick up a fourth core.
And when do you think you'll be able to pick up a fourth core?
I don't know. Whenever they get it. Probably three and a half weeks.
Yeah, so we're talking October. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's when I expect them to start showing up in stores, is about October.
So that can segue us into our next comment, which we alluded to earlier. John is not very happy right now. John, you are a sad man?
I'm pretty angry, yeah. I think FFG blew the easiest segue into a new game they could have ever had with, you know, Thrones 2.0. They had this established player base that was there, willing to play more. But here in Ottawa and in a lot of Canada, and I think in a lot of the states too, there's nothing really going on until Worlds. So if you're one of the people that aren't going to Worlds, and there's a lot of us because they sold their tickets out and it's a segregated section. Now, I think Thrones actually still has tickets, right, for the 1.0 events?
I believe it does, yes. Although yeah. I don't know if Worlds does. I haven't really followed that ticketing nightmare. Obviously, as a podcast person giving you people news, I probably should have. But I do know that it's a ticketing nightmare. And that the guide for idiots that has a picture of me in it is apparently necessary, because apparently it's
there's a picture
impossible.
Of you in it.
Didn't know. I told you this on the cast last time.
Link me this. I need to see the picture.
No, when they had a guy. I mean, it's just one of their generic Worlds pictures, but I happen to be.
But
in
when they
it,
talk so about, like, you know, this is how to do things, that's you and you're the idiot.
Well, yeah, basically.
That's awesome.
It's their sort of idiot's guide to signing up, and it turns out it's necessary because when you do, you get confirmation for something you didn't actually get, and then you have to go to the next step and re-enter. Anyway, apparently it's complicated. I'm taking people's words for it. I can't come to Worlds, so I'm not, you know, going through that system.
FFG screwed up another IT thing, but I'm not going, and I don't think anyone from Ottawa is actually going. So that means for them and for me, there's nothing until 2.0 is out. And some of us got box sets, you know, at Gen Con, and the rest of the people are just waiting and waiting and waiting. And, you know, probably my best friend Adrian started playing Magic. He's like, I can't wait for Aegon anymore. I need my, you know, weekly fix to some card game. Start playing Magic. We have a couple other people that show up every Tuesday, religiously show up, they play God at a bar, and some of them just said, you know what, I'm tired of this 1.0, it's the same thing, nothing's changing, I'm going to play Doomtown. One of the other ones said, you know what, I'm going to play Netrunner, because all the LCGs are kind of there at that meetup. So all of a sudden, our weekly, you know, meetup of anywhere from 6 to maybe 10 players is down to 2 to 4. And that's horrible, because now when these new players finally get here and they show up, and I asked them, I said, are you guys going to play 2.0? And Adrian said, well, you know, I'll start getting ready a month before Gen Con next year. Maybe we'll see. You know, maybe I'll play Magic. You know, I'll still go to Gen Con. I just don't know if it'll be for Thrones anymore. And, you know, Richard said, oh, I'm loving Netrunner. You know, this game is robust. It's doing well. I'm having fun. Whatever. I don't like Netrunner personally, but he's really enjoying it. And he might stick with it. So I'm losing my players to the other games. I was supposed to steal the other games' players. This is not what I expected. And it's all because FFG just missed the boat, literally, on their distribution. And it's depressing, because we had this great opportunity to go from 9 to 15, but instead I've gone to 2 or 4. And it sucks.
Again, I'm going to let you be the more – there are certainly negative feelings I have here, but I'm going to try and play devil's advocate here. Exactly. For overall North American meta groups that have been dwindling over the year because they know that the game is over. Not all of them had Gen Con to look forward to, and so this process of attrition has been much longer than that. You guys have delayed that process of attrition by still having a final game Gen Con in your sights, but for a lot of people, this probably started in regionals.
And you're there was right. No it's way worse for some people.
There was no way that the 2.0 release was going to be fast enough for them to prevent that erosion completely until they could sort of restart things with
no,
the 2.0
core
set.
No, but it could – like, here's the thing.
I mean, you're talking about a very, very small – from. I'm not saying it's
– The more dedicated
thing.
The player, the longer they're willing to wait. So the longer this goes on, the more of those really dedicated players you're losing, and those are the players that will do what you just did, Alex, that will show up at a gaming store and give a demo to bring in new players. And the more of those you lose, the smaller your meta will become. And it's a huge impact. Like, FFG doesn't realize how big of an impact these key players like yourself are to a meta, because they're the ones that are there every single week, always playing, and people know that if they come, they'll at least be able to play Alexander Hines because he will be there. And I'm losing some of those players, the guys that are always there, that are willing to do demos, that love the game because they just can't wait anymore. And that's so sad. And that's happening everywhere. Look at Spanish, right? The Spanish Nationals this year. They went down to like less than 20 players this year. Like
different reasons.
3 years ago. It's ridiculous. Yes. Oh. Because their organized play absolutely sucks. The same issue that we see around the world. FFG lets all these other distributors deal with their organized play, and they screw it up. They put it in places that make no sense, like Vancouver for the Canadian Nationals. And they don't talk to the community, and the prize support is horrible. Because, a bunch of these international tournaments, you can win your stay at Gen Con, but not your flight. How useful is that? Wouldn't you rather your flight than your stay?
Stay at Worlds.
Yeah, Worlds, sorry.
Yeah, you're lodging.
But I mean, same thing. It's depressing to look at this. And there's so many places, Yu-Gi-Oh, Pokemon, Magic, that do organized play so well. Why can't FSG? It's an investment into marketing.
It is an investment in marketing, and it should be done better, but Yu-Gi-Oh! And Pokemon, and stop me if I'm wrong, because I'm actually making shit up right now, but those games are in CCG formats where you can easily do the sort of base prize support where you have collectibles, where you give boosters, where you have foils or whatever the system
is. Okay, boosters are real money to these companies. They still have to print them. They still have to create them. FFG could do the same thing. They could give a box set. They could give a two. You could win the 1.0 event and get a 2.0. The first place person can get 3 2.0 starter sets. That's awesome.
Yeah, but there's a limited extent to which you can do that. So FFG
Ashes,
is forced to print new product.
Ashes, Doomtown, Versus, all LCGs. Well, they're not allowed to be called LCGs legally, but all these three games all had, like, Versus had $10,000 at Gen Con. Ashes had the next year of packs to the winner. Like, other events can do that. Why can't EGOT?
I mean, the next year of packs, is that really that interesting a prize?
That's a couple $100 to me. Think about it. Every month I spend $15 on
that. I'm not saying it's not a significant prize, but I'm saying that's
More interesting than nothing?
You're comparing it to nothing. That's not
well.
I mean, at Gen Con, that's not what was offered.
Let's look at the first prize at Gen Con. It's a card design. Alex, have you designed your card?
I have not designed my card.
Oh my god, I haven't designed mine. And before French Horn Mikey, who won in 2012.
Yes.
Yeah, he hasn't designed his card either, and he's emailed every year 2 to 3 times. So, I've asked around, and a lot of the other champions haven't designed their cards either.
Yeah,
so
the card design process, they certainly do not seem to have kept up with the fact that they increased the number of card designs, and they're well behind that.
I haven't even got an email reply.
Yes, I agree. That particular aspect. However, the fact that
their number one prize doesn't actually happen.
It happens sometimes. Simone got his.
It hasn't happened in
Bruno got his.
Simone was lucky, and Bruno personally knows the guys from FFG. So Simone got his like a couple years later.
The Chinese champ got his pretty quickly.
I think that's because the Chinese distributor actually forced FFG to do it. I mean, we could ask them specifically, but that's the rumor I heard.
Well, maybe we should be pushing our local distributor for a world championship
this
card.
This is the problem because our Canadian distributor sucks, but we didn't get a card designed anyways in Canada.
No, we did not.
So that doesn't really...
Nor should we have had one. I don't have enough people. Championships in general should have them.
I don't even think Gen Con should have them. Really,
no,
I think
no,
all
probably
worlds.
Not. Yeah. Worlds and Stalic are probably the events that.
But if you offer a prize, you should actually give it out.
Well, did I mention on the cast?
You got your bag?
I did get my bag. I got my bag from
9 months
from Worlds 2014 in August 2015.
That's great.
There was a couple of emails. And then somebody else, Dan Kid Seafelt, had followed some email chains after I had, and he eventually got to someone, told me at Gen Con who he got to at the end of the line. It was a newer employee, and as soon as we contacted that employee, we got our bags, and it finally sorted out. But
so basically what you're saying is you would have never got your bag if you hadn't just constantly harassed FFG until you got your bag.
If the other two finalists, so the Targ player and the French player that were at that Melee final table, if you haven't gotten your bags, definitely contact us at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com and we'll put you in touch with the right person to get your swag that you deserve.
So you won't have to spend
from Worlds 2014.
9 months.
Yeah. But I do agree. I think that
so sad
that they've had growing pains with organized play, and they didn't really know
years
how to
that they've
do
been doing
LCG
this.
Organized play.
14 years, Alex. CCG, LCG, forever. 11 years, maybe.
Yeah, but it basically didn't exist before. They didn't understand the necessity for organized play before.
They had organized
play. And when they founded
it,
obviously there's going to be some stumbling blocks, and there have been. This
I believe Morgan was the head of organized play when she first joined FFG. Like, I have a video of her teaching the game and talking about organized play.
Yeah, that was CCG era, was it not?
Right, but why didn't they, like, they've been doing it since the CCG. Why can't they get it right now?
Because in the CCG, they did it the same way everybody else did, which is to say they did it with
booster packs.
And the Gold Dragon system based on incentivizing people to buy more boosters, which was something they lost out on. So when they lost the ability to do formulaically what basically all other companies are doing, I think it took them quite a while to find a system where they're printing these custom alt art cards, which I think is a reasonably good solution to the problem. We've talked about some other things, like the boosters could potentially have black
cards.
See, I
even disagree with that. I think alternate art cards are great for store champions, but regionals need more, and nationals need even more than that. And they've been trying with the backpacks and the Stonehouse cards, but I think they got to take their game up a notch here. You know, I'm not saying that they should do what they do in Magic, where they give out cash prizes, but there has to be something more.
I mean, I think criticizing them for failing at very specific things is entirely fair. I think that, for instance, the World Championship card designs, I think there's something that they failed on. They have a huge backlog of it, and that's something that they definitely need to address. I think that the North American National or the Canadian Nationals and the Spanish Nationals certainly are a big flag that tells them they have to handle this differently. But I think that's mostly a problem that arose this year, so I can kind of forgive them for how bad it is. I mean, for the Spanish ones, it's been a while. Let's be fair. Mm-hmm. But for some
you
of the other
ones – you can see them losing more and more people.
For some of the other ones, it's – was either the metas didn't exist really prior in the Scandinavian and the Nordic nationals, and so this is the first year it's been incorporated, and the fact that there were some problems there, you know, that's a flag for
that's forgivable,
but it's the first time. Yeah. I would say the same for Canadian nationals. They did it fine last year, so there was no reason for them to say, okay, we should change it.
Yeah,
but
I agree.
You know, this year
I'm fine with those.
But I think, for instance, Worlds was a step in the wrong direction this year. Capped it and the way that they tried to put all the events into one weekend, I think they just cannot do that anymore. And I think that they're getting backlash on the Netrunner side, and they're getting backlash in some other ways. And again, I can forgive them for taking a step in the wrong direction because they're still experimenting with organized play. And if you don't make mistakes, then you don't do anything. But if they make the same mistake next year, then obviously that's just stupidity.
But I mean, they've been making mistakes with their prize support forever.
I've thought about this for a while, and you haven't come up with any particularly good options there either. Because
what are you talking about? I have. Have you not gone and looked at my blog post where I detail like a whole organized play way of doing things for FFG?
No, so, I haven't. But maybe you can elucidate us and over the show, because I'm sure lots of listeners have not seen this blog post.
I believe in a point system. I think that these big events like Nationals, if they're going to be – or Worlds, if they're going to have a certain amount of seats, that it should actually be an invitee system, similar to the way some of the other games are doing. You should get points for winning store champions and regionals, and you shouldn't be going to Worlds unless you have a certain amount of points. And – if you have a certain amount of points, Worlds, the entry fee is free for you because you've accumulated that you've paid out in the other events. And I actually think that store championships should be winning the alternate cards and the Stonehouse cards, and that regional events should have a payout of some kind, whether that's in, like you said, booster packs. Like, I'm fine receiving the next year or the next 3 months or 4 months of packs for free, even if I was going to buy them. I mean, that's a nice incentive. I think that's okay. And if FFG doesn't want to give out cash prizes, that's okay too. But they can give out other things. They can give out art pieces. They can give out T-shirts. They can give out – you know what they can do? They can give me points, and I can accumulate these points on an online store, which I can then redeem however I want. And if I accumulate enough points, if I win enough store championships and regionals, I can get a card design. I can get, you know – time to do a special art piece or a signed art piece or an alternate art card that only I will have but's legal in other events. So they can have an online store with all these different prizes, and as I accumulate points from all these events that I go to, the more events I go to, the more points I accumulate, and the cooler the prizes I can purchase. So I can save them up, or I can get lame things like, you know, the Danny alternate art from 2 years ago, or they print on demand. This is easy for them. Like, why isn't there an online store with all these different prizes, and I just get points dependent on the number of people that showed up at the regional or showed up at the store championship that I beat?
I don't know. Why don't you? I mean, like, minor details aside, the part of that I like the most is that it is a reward that scales with your
participation.
Exactly. So I could show up to only one store championship and take first and win all these prizes, or I could show up to four and win first and win the same prize four times. That's not all that great. It's not all.
But now you would have the points. You could buy something cooler.
Yeah, I think there is a strong incentive for it to be a scaling currency type system.
Because we had all these problems with people that couldn't win a second buy. Right, they went to store championships, won their buys. They can only get one for regionals. All the other buys went to the next player. That sucks for them. They just stopped going to the store championships. So we went from 25 players to 12 to 8, and that's sad.
Yeah, I think that if you're just going to your local store championship because of the chance of winning a buy, then you're doing it wrong. But that's I acknowledge that there are other types of players. But I think you're right. Having a system that scales, that incentivizes you to attend as many events as you can, and that rewards you for doing so, is a good one. And I think you're right in that something defined. A prize, no matter what it is, if it's not random and it's, you know, an alt art card, there's a maximum number of them you could ever use, you know, probably three. A playmat, that if it's not of like 40 different playmats, you're only ever going to be able to use that one playmat once. You don't want seven copies of that same playmat, unless it's my World Championship playmat, in which case you want many, 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 many.
I mean, I have five Tyrion Lannister playmats. What am I going to do with that?
I think that's a good point. I think it may be time to bring back the Gold Dragons in a slightly different format, not associating it with product purchases ever, because obviously product purchases are not a very meaningful metric in an LCG format like they are in a CCG, right. But certainly as a participation system. And then
you can have X points for participating, X points for top 8, X points for top 4, X points for winning in second. You know, like, it'd be so easy. You base it on the number of players.
I mean, anyways, I can see them also incentivizing and rewarding other things with points as well. Contribution of articles on their front page and things like
demos.
That.
Demos.
Yeah. I
running
mean,
a tournament.
It's true that they've mentioned, and we can maybe pray that this is what they mean, that they were going to have a system to reward tournament organizers and judges.
They're not doing
once
this.
They
They're
get
screwing
their
it up,
system.
Alex. Come on, it's FFG.
Well, they've been talking about having a set of floor rules first and then a set of a judge program, and they mentioned this sort of at Worlds last year, roughly.
Yeah, a year ago.
And they said it was going to roll out soon, so early April. And we'll see what happens there. I think that you're going a little in the your local meta is experiencing what other metas have experienced, and therefore going a little harshly on things that are outside of their control or that are.
I totally agree. It's because just recently we lost a lot of players, so I'm a little harsh. You've hit the nail on the head with that, and I won't pretend otherwise. But if other metas have experienced this, you know, I feel better. Bad for those other metas too. It's really tough right now.
I do think that there's certainly underlying issues, and I think some of them are definitely at the organized play. I'm not convinced that there's much they can do about the release of the product. I think, obviously, I'm convinced that if they wanted, or what they wanted was for the core to come out faster.
Mm-hmm.
I'm convinced that whatever happened there was a screw up. Now, they've had enough of these screw-ups that we would wish that they would have prevented these kinds of screw-ups, but there are always new ways things can screw up.
Okay. Yeah, but they could have just, you know, been safe, ordered it 3 months ahead of time.
That probably would have ended testing 3 months ahead. Maybe that just
I heard they had more testers than ever. Yeah, exactly.
Well, more testers than ever does not mean faster testing.
Okay, but I understand that, you know, 9 women can't have a baby in 1 month, but what they really could have done was, like you said, just started it earlier, like planned it out. It's the planning of FFG. I feel like the company stumbled onto some great IPs.
There is a catch there, though, with the planning it earlier, because the earlier you announce 2.0, the longer the lead-up is. Well, as soon as you start testing for it, you've basically announced it.
Their testers are supposed to have NDAs. They're supposed to be quiet. They didn't have to have a million to start. They could have had like a small group of 30 dedicated testers to do 2.0 that would keep it quiet and then brought the larger testing group in later.
Well, maybe that's what they did. I don't know. I don't know what happened before the larger testing group hit the...
Right. We all don't know.
I have knowledge of what happened once the larger testing group hit in, but I don't know what happened before that. And I know.
That's what I mean. We don't know. But
okay, you sounded sarcastic. Like, we're under NDA and we can't say it, but we really don't know.
I'm saying it sarcastically because I know FFG.
Ah, okay.
Right?
I see. Like, I think that for the large part of their casual sales, the delays where this is coming out in October instead of first week of August doesn't matter.
Nope.
It's still pre-Christmas, for instance, which makes a difference. It's, mm-hmm. you know, most of these people didn't go to Gen Con. They don't know the game is out yet. As you've mentioned, there's not that
casual
advertising.
Casual does not care. It's your current meta that are suffering.
Yeah, exactly. It's current meta that are suffering, but I think that suffering has been from the day 2.0 was announced. I think we've been lucky that we have lots of playgroups that we reach out to that had the goal of Gen Con, for instance, and there are still others that have the goal of Worlds, so they don't care, or Stalic. So they'll hold off until then because that's the sort of final point that they've set for 1.0. Because we set ours, mistakenly or otherwise, at Gen Con, any time between Gen Con and the wide release feels like completely dead air.
Forever.
But, yep. I mean, if someone, upon hearing about 2.0, said, oh, yeah, that's it, I'm ditching this 1.0 thing, then, it wouldn't have mattered if the game had come out at Gen Con wide release. That was still too long a lag time.
Right, you lost them forever. Yeah.
Anyway, in the grand scheme of things, does it matter tremendously to FFG? Somewhat. I think, as you said, it's a missed opportunity because the existing players, if they stick around, are a great springboard, or should be a great springboard.
I think it'll happen, the same thing that happened with their transition to CCG. They're going to lose some people now, and in a couple of years they'll be doing better and they'll be happy about it. But they could have been doing better right away. So is it a hit to FFG? Yeah, I think that they've decided that instead of using Nitro to kick their car into high speed and zoom up to the finish line, they're going to take the scenic route.
Wait, we're doing car analogies now?
Well, we're desperate, Alex. We have no 2.0.
All right. Now, how about that local sports team there, John?
Yeah, let's not talk about any Ottawa local sports teams ever
again.
Hey,
you guys, the Red Gold started off great this year. You started off really well. Anyway.
Yeah.
More of our audience lost. More of our audience. Our audience is decaying.
They like Canadian football. We're gone.
It's a thing. All right. Well, I think that will wrap up our little bitch session then.
Yes, I'm done now. I feel better.
Was that cathartic? Yeah, that was cathartic.
Yeah, that was good.
Okay.
Our listeners get to go through the 7 stages of grief with me. That was anger, by the way.
What do we get next week? I've never really followed this whole 7 stages.
I think it's acceptance.
No, it can't be that fast. It's bargaining, isn't it? No.
No, I've already passed bargaining. I'm at anger.
No, I thought anger was first.
I'll have to
look
it up.
Denial was first, and then
denial. Yeah.
Oh well.
I've already passed denial. Let me see, 7
It's totally going to come out on time. That was the denial bit.
Yeah.
That was us two months before Gen Con. We're like, FFG has learned their lessons.
Yeah. Totally first stage is shock and denial. The second stage is pain and guilt. I've already vented that. Third stage is the anger and bargaining. That's where I'm at.
Ah, anger and bargaining.
So next week, you can all look forward to depression, reflection, and loneliness.
Maybe that's the metaphor that the other podcast is going for with a single host. They're going for that loneliness sort of.
They're already moved on to depression, reflection, and loneliness.
Excellent.
You go, white book. Don't worry. Later, I'll have I'll work through it, and then finally acceptance and hope. So it's coming. It's 4 weeks away.
Closing comments, John. Do you still feel better, or are you starting to feel worse again?
No, I'm feeling good.
You vented completely. You vented.
Yeah. I'm done now.
There's one major.
Maybe I won't play Magic.
Major social event of the season coming up this weekend.
Oh, what's that?
The unofficial Black Tie National, the UK Nationals.
Oh, the UK's, yeah.
And apparently there's like three – there's this thing. One of the hosts for Banter Behind the Throne was commenting on three-button rule. I don't know what this is. Like, is it which buttons you can have open on your vest, on your suit?
Yeah, well, you always have to leave one open, right, Alex? You know that?
No. Explain.
Really? You never do up the bottom button on a suit jacket, ever.
Then why does it have a bottom button? Why does it have a bottom button?
To throw off people that are uncouth.
Oh, so it's so that people can spot idiots like me who would do up the bottom button. I thought that was just so that, like, when people sat down or because they're all too fat. No?
No. No.
Okay.
James Bond doesn't do up his bottom button. He is not a fat man.
James Bond. Okay. All right. Yeah. I guess
there's actually the three reasons to why you don't do up the bottom button by James Bond on Google. First one, it sends a signal that you pay attention to detail, Alex.
I'm not a very detail-minded person, so that would explain it.
In most situations, it actually makes the suit look about 10 times better on a man. Unless you have breasts. Do you have breasts, Alex? Because it says women sometimes do up the bottom button to accentuate their breasts.
I still haven't shed the pregnancy 15, but
well,
I
still haven't.
I will.
You know, every kid I gained 20 pounds, but that's not my fault, right? It's the children.
John, you haven't had 8 kids.
I've had 4, though, and 20 times 4 is 80 pounds. Alex, that's a lot of weight.
All right, and what's the third reason?
Oh, there's like all these diagrams with body types and stuff. It seems to be something about the way we're, as a man, built.
All right, well.
It's okay. Too complicated. It's a lot of reading. I'm skipping this part.
Okay,
this is technical.
So the point is, I don't know anything about suits. Last week we established I didn't know how to tie a tie, and I have to
look. That was kind of scary, yeah.
Anyway, clearly most of our listeners know this stuff, and I'm just the odd one out. And you'll get to show it all off at the Black Tie event of the season, UK Nationals. Sorry, the unofficial black tie event of the season. If you don't wear a black tie, obviously you'll be shunned, but you won't be turned.
Because no one will actually wear a black tie, probably.
So black tie doesn't mean wearing a black tie. Now I'm really lost. All right.
Yeah. You only wear a completely black tie at a funeral of someone that you've loved dearly, actually. Just for the record. Like, not a normal funeral. It's like your wife or a very close relative. Child.
I thought we were going away from the grieving and the and up to acceptance. And
Bow ties could be black. Just for the record. If you're wearing a bow tie, which no one wears anymore, that could be pure black. You're okay.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.